You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
Join us as we focus the spotlight back on the theater maker to uncover their process.
We speak with folks in the industry that often aren't heard from,
such as stage managers, producers, crew members, marketing professionals,
and everything in between. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, my name is Germán Martínez, pronouns he, they, and I'm a sound designer.
Welcome.
We, we go way back to college days, and Mary and I and Germán were just talking about this before we started recording, that we're just getting the Montclair Mafia on Page to Stage, and we're also coining that term, the Montclair Mafia,
of
theater folks taking over the New York theater scene.
To round up.
I really love to see everyone in, and it makes me just feel so happy that I'm like, oh, somebody from home. It does feel like home, you know?
It's true. It's so true. And you've been so busy lately. Do you want to tell everybody what you're currently working on?
Absolutely. I've been definitely working for sure. I got to keep the lights on. Well, today I'm opening up my official off-Broadway debut, MCC, with the production of Soft by Danye R. Love, directed by Whitney White. And I'm currently going to be making my Broadway debut, wow, quick jump, at the St. James with the production of Into the Woods.
Woo! Which just transferred from City Center, which I got a chance to see and see you afterwards, which was frigging awesome. And it's so exciting that, like, I'm sure it's like a whirlwind, and that whole experience was a whirlwind to even like become a part of, and we'll get into that later on.
Oh yeah,
crazy.
I just didn't expect that. I for a long time I worked on a lot of shows that it was hard to get anybody at the foot of the door, and to have so much eyes on this between Twitter and TikTok and the whole community was just raving about it, that I was very overwhelmed. But so it's nice to see this kind of support.
And we've had a couple people from the sound world on the podcast. We've had Jess Paz, Tui McCollum, two collaborators in which you've worked with before.
Yes, they are incredible. Jess, I consider a mentor. She is a powerful, powerful woman, just incredibly smart. And the way she approaches the process and sound is I'm in awe when I was in a room with her. And Tui, what a beacon for to build community, what a great person. I truly love Tui. Like, one of the first people to give me a shot. I think we also like went on a blind date, kind of like a assistant designer kind of thing. And it ended up working out. It ended up working out really nicely. And then we just kept working on different projects from then on. So I have a lot of love for the two of them.
I love the, because I feel like with both people we've just interviewed for Sound, with Jess and Tui, I feel like they both have really talked about the community and talked about, you know, the networking. And I just, I mean, maybe it's just my ignorance here, but I feel like the Sound community feels very small. I don't know if you feel the same way. And so I feel like everyone works with everybody, but also everyone is just like really genuinely looking out for each other, which is just so nice to see. And I love that.
It is. It is. And let me tell you, I didn't know how, well I agree with, well, first, I want to agree with you and say that it is a small community. So we all know who's on what show. We're all like, oh, you're over here. You're loading it with so-and-so. You're assisting so-and-so person. So we all know what's going on. So it's really warm in that capacity, but I didn't recognize how much of a community it was until the pandemic, really. So I'm part of this organization called TSCCA, the Theatrical Sound Designers and Composers Association. And so that was, it was a platform that was already available for quite some time, but it really kicked off when it came to the pandemic. And they really jumped on to say, oh, well, everybody's at home. Let's do some planning. And the organization is has always been geared towards advancing sound design, sharing with the world for the education, and providing more equity and diversity and between the field and rights all around. And so I really appreciate the group, but they took the opportunity during the pandemic to say, all right, well, we have a bunch of people sitting at home. Let's do some masterclasses, essentially. And it was great to talk between Jess, Lindsay Jones, Palmer Hefner, Nevin Steinberg. Everyone did like a video. Everybody had a class. Ken Goodwin, Josh Samuels, all people who I look up to and consider smart people good resources to have. So it's nice to be connected in that sense. I've been also had the opportunity to like meet other folks throughout between the central region, between the western region. It's nice to expand network that way.
Well, how else, I mean, aside from this association, which sounds amazing, and I wrote it down so we can put it in our show notes for our listeners, how else are you guys networking? How else are you meeting people and kind of finding the gigs? Like, is there another area, or is there something that you've personally done that's been working really well for you?
I wish that I could have invented the way. No, you know, you got to do the old school. It's about getting into the rooms. You show up to the calls, and you never know who's going to be on the call. So by that, I mean, I remember when I had graduated and I would take up load-ins, whether it be at Theater Row or load-ins at any of the local theaters here, like MCC, Signature. I tried my best to get on those calls because I knew I was just going to meet folk. And there's always going to be the need for hands. There's always going to be the need for somebody to run something. And, you know, work ethic speaks for itself. People will recognize how you show up, who you are, and would want to give you a chance. And so I've been so blessed by the kindness of the people around me that I show up with my full self, with my 100%, and they go, all right, why don't you get you working for me? And actually, it's funny, talking to about Tui, we had crossed paths one time, and I just didn't recognize it because I guess I was just so busy that I didn't bother retaining any information of who was in for that day. But then she had told me, we were like, I think this is the first time we meet in person. She's like, no, we actually met in person before. I think you were just busy that day.
That's amazing. If anyone who's listening maybe doesn't live in New York or close enough to New York, do you recommend still getting involved like locally, regionally? If they have plans to jump to New York at some point in their life, how important do you find it to be in proximity to the city as you're growing and as you're learning? Like, do you think that there is a need from a networking standpoint to make sure you're building those connections in New York, even if you don't live close to it?
Absolutely. So I guess I can only talk from my personal experience. I guess I can say I had the privilege of growing up in Jersey City. I was born and raised in Jersey City. I lived in I lived in Union City for a long time. And I was a 15-minute bus ride from New York. And so I currently live in Weehawken. I'm quick in and out. And so that was really important to me when I was an undergrad, whereas a lot of folks, when I did summer stock, I stayed in the city and I did whatever thing I could do, whoever would hire me. Sometimes it was as a stage manager, sometimes it was as a sound person. But to try to get that like New York sense of mind and see what it was to like do theater. For me, for right now, the picking is ripe for anybody who wants to come to the city. A lot of folks left the industry. A lot of folks said theater is not sustainable right now, which is a good conversation to have. But a lot of folks left, and anybody who did stick it out, there's kind of, but what you had talked about, like the small community, there is like maybe 10 of us who are just swapping between jobs who are like, I can't do this. Can you? And so we're all trying to like fill in the position because we're trying to recover from the pandemic and go, all these shows and not enough folks. So I was just talking to a friend who was out in the central region, the Midwest. And I said, listen, if you're thinking to go, to come into the city, now is the time. People will put you to work. And I definitely recommend that. For me, I knew that the goal was always Broadway. I would always want to do that. That was undeniable. And so I knew that for me, I had to get into the city. But that's not everybody's track. Some people come to the city and figure that out and end up taking different paths, which is also okay. What I would recommend is find out who the players are. Find out who's doing what. What's the work that you want to do? What's the work that you want to be seeing and being part of? And then you start to like find the end that way.
And so you graduated, as we mentioned, from Montclair State with a BFA in production design. And so do you think you did most of your learning in the classroom or on the job? Or would you say it's a nice even split between the two?
Oof, I'm still doing the learning. What you talking about? No, I want to say that right now I'm on the path of most growth. And what that means is the learning doesn't stop. I'm still, even now, I'm still being introduced to new software, new consoles. What I will say is that undergrad gave me a very strong base of what the standard is, what to expect when you walk into a room. And for me, I'm a very kinesthetic learner. That gave me all the tools I needed to succeed. And so when you start to, not me, let me speak from the eye. When I started going out and working with other sound designers that weren't, you know, my professor, who is great, Scott O'Brien, if you're listening to this, shout out to you. But when I started to work with other sound designers that weren't my peers, that wasn't my professor, I felt like it was easier for me to navigate and be a little more flexible how I approach my work, knowing what the job is at hand. And so you pick up tips and tricks from other people around, but ultimately my foundation has meant everything for me.
Basically, I'm just curious if you wouldn't mind kind of, since you've worn so many different hats on Team Sound, as we've called it in our notes here, maybe just kind of giving us a breakdown or our listeners a breakdown of like what each of those roles mean in relation to any production. And if you want to use any specific production that you've worked on in the past or currently, that's totally fine with us as well.
Absolutely. I mean, does anybody still wear a hat?
I'm glad we got it in there.
Oh,
it's
love
clipped.
Company.
It's there. It's good.
Do we have the rights to say that? Do we have the rights? So just to reiterate, you're wanting me to go over all the hats worn?
I guess like if you think of like the organizational chart for a sound department when you're working on a production. So, you know, sound designer at the top, and then how does that trickle down?
Yeah, all the way
down to the engineers, technicians, and...
Absolutely. How I can think about it immediately is sound designer, of course, meets the needs of the director, make sure that the creative end is met. In order to fulfill that need, we have the associate who will act really as second in command, right hand person who will do every really be a backbone in the production to make all those needs melt, make all those needs be met, whether that be generating paperwork, whether that be communicating notes, whether that be taking care of it, of anything else that the sound designer can't directly take care of. They are really there to support the sound designer's vision. An assistant, what I've learned because I've been in this kind of position, is that an assistant is an excellent position to bring somebody in and learn. I've been an assistant in a few places. at the Public. I'm an assistant now at Into the Woods. Again, this is my first time on Broadway, so to put me on right away is wouldn't be setting myself up for success in my perspective. So an assistant really is a nice position to bring someone in, to get somebody to learn the ropes, how it's done on that kind of caliber. So I think an assistant position is really valuable in that aspect. Now, it's not only just to bring someone in who is a little green, for lack of a better word, but it's somebody else to also help out and has the particular skill sets to help out on the production. Then we get our production audio. Another backbone when it comes to the industry. So they're the person who is leading the crew. They're the person who is in direct communication with the associate or the sound designer. And they're the ones making it happen when it comes to getting their hands dirty. They're the ones hanging the speaker. They're the ones making sure everything is worked to the specifications and schematics of the designer. So to me, I have always tipped my hat off to all the production audios I've worked for. It's been at regionals, so they're the ones who know the theater and the space and the equipment best. So I go with their expertise. And then we jump to any of the crew, and that crew might be an A1 who is oftentimes mixing a show, an A2 who is backstage. And very often you get an A3, which is just another A2. And then you have the sound crew who just who may just work for the day, who might do some notes, but aren't directly involved with the production.
I'm fascinated by like you said, the organizational chart of it all.
Listen, it's a whole volleyball team. You can't. It takes a whole village to make it happen.
Oh yeah, I absolutely do not doubt that at all. I'm curious. Do we see all of these positions at every level, or is it obviously more? I shouldn't say obviously, but I'm sure it's more common to see all of these positions filled at a Broadway level. But what about a regional level or an off Broadway?
No, that is a great question, because it really depends on the resources of the institution. Oftentimes, I've had to fight to get another pair of hands on, because it really comes down to money. Can an institution really pay to have somebody there to do X amount of hours for X job? And so you get into situations where you do get an army of one person doing everything. For me, I guess I like working in a team. I think theater is a team sport and a team endeavor. And I am nothing without my associate, without my assistant. I feel the strongest and most supported when I have other people around me to bounce ideas off of, to make sure that I can delegate responsibilities to. So that really is a luxury to have that in certain theaters. In some regionals, yeah, there is the house head who takes care of the production audio, who is there supervising the equipment, how things come in, come out, and then they hire their local people to come in and load in the system. And they might have some, the institution might have a favorite person who runs the show. So it really depends on the size. Right now at MCC, which is more of an off-Broadway space, yeah, they did have a production audio. Shout out to the production audios. And I did have a board op. So that stuff, it's kind of an unspoken thing of it is understood that to run the show, you need a certain crew. There's the crew to run the show. There's a crew to make the creative decisions and make that happen. And I'm glad that some people take are in the know of the difference between the two, because that just opens again another conversation and jar of worms about, am I going to get paid more money to run the show if I design this? Am I sticking along? It's just about resources at that point.
And of course, play versus musical, there's different needs there when it comes to
staff. Oh, yes. I mean, you also get your plays with music. You never know.
Exactly. As we were talking about before, most recently, and you're currently working on the Broadway-bound production of Into the Woods. So can you walk us through that process from your perspective and kind of break that down for us? Being that it was such a short, truncated process, what are some of the things you noticed that maybe were different from working on that versus more of a traditional process in production where you have a standard process?
Of course. So this one was very fast. I want to emphasize to the listeners how fast this was. To get into exacts, we had an 8-hour tech. that 8 hour tech, we had to do the whole, what, 2.5 hour show in that time. We had notes for the, a 4 hour note session the next day, but then we did a dress rehearsal. So it, again, was fast.
Is that normal for encores?
For encores, yes. So the okay. integrity of encores is to be able to provide affordable shows. The shows are often show time shows that aren't done. And let me be clear, they're musicals that aren't done, and they hire a bunch of celebrities and they get them on in this truncated amount of time, and they do it for a weekend. Now, given that this was a very unique circumstance, we did it for 2 weeks of performances. I think given the name, the fact that it was a Stephen Sondheim show, they wanted to really like give this one a little bit more TLC. But not enough TLC to, you know, have more hours of tech. But it was a crazy process. So I was hired. I was given a call by Scott Lehrer. Scott Lehrer has been doing the encore shows for about 30 years now, one of which has also transferred to Broadway, it being Chicago. And so he kind of like has been there, done that with encores. Yeah, other guest designers always come in and do that, but at encores, that's really like his like baby, for lack of a better word. So he had given me a call and said, "Hey, we're doing this this thing over at encores. You want to be part of it?" I said, "Sure, I'm happy to." And in that vein of path of most growth, I always want to learn more, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity to. So I show up. We had quiet. We had some days of load in, and some that was enough time to like program the QLab file. Our A1 was programming the console so that she could mix the show. So everything is really done in advance, because it's going to be quick and fast. So we saw a run through. We talked about some sound cues, and then we jumped in to tech the very next day. And because they were so tight in the room, because they really had the opportunity to be in communication with the lighting designer, they would send videos of what staging would be like. Everybody was prepped in advance to kind of just plug and play, and anything that needed refining would be taken care of on the fly. In my case, we really had to give a little bit TLC for like those sound cues, for like those giant footsteps, because those were kind of an added event. And so with James Ortiz and the two actors playing Craving the Boots, we took some time to make sure we got each of those steps in, and then also program those into the console. That being said, 8 hours was just enough time to get all of that in, and the other four-hour day for notes was just enough to like, let's clean this up. And then we showed. So that was the first time I've ever done that for like a musical that size with celebrities and, you know, so on and so forth. So that is mind blowing to me. I still think it's crazy.
Is that format something that you'd like to explore again if given the chance, or is that something that's like a one and done, you'd much prefer the like standard, more traditional like production schedule?
I'm always for the side of like, let's sit in and bake in this event and have enough time. I mean, who doesn't like more time on this? I mean, really the integrity of the encores production is all about the music. We're in here to present the show. It's not a fully realized production. It's about the music being presented in this like reading-esque style. And so I inherently understand the like why that is. In something like that, I can understand. For something that I do a lot of plays, give me my time of tech. I want to look at things with a careful eye and really sit and simmer with stuff.
And I actually just have another question as you were talking. So when you said that you guys were programming the board prior to your very quick tech, mm-hmm. is that something that you do once you're in the theater, or is that something you do ahead and bring it into the theater? Encores or regular?
Absolutely.
Style?
That's a really good question. So it could be done one of two ways. So yes, in that load in time while scenery is doing their thing, while lights are being hung, it is ideal for our A1 to take the time and program each scene, which is containing who's going to be on stage, who needs to be up. In a musical kind of sense, what am I doing with my band? And you know, that kind of refining happens with the sound designer during tech. Or you can also program it in advance. There are a lot of softwares, Digico Offline Editor, Yamaha CL Editor, are just tools to use. I use these like nomenclature, but they're just softwares to edit on the console, so you can have things prepared in advance. It's also done at the shops when people are getting ready for the shows. We'll have a day, we'll test everything, make sure everything's working. And when the time allows, the A1 will take the opportunity to get some scenes in, or at least get a base layout of like, what am I looking at? Essentially, the A1 is going to be living at this place for X amount of time. They should be programming it to the needs of how they're going to run, whether that be making sure their DCAs, just what the 1 through 8 microphones that they're controlling are set throughout, or the layouts when you have like really big consoles where you have like 3 banks of layers, where are you setting your like sound designer bank so that the sound designer can come out and do tweaks onto the band or make adjustments to any of the actors. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I feel like I have like 5 more, but we'll just keep going, because I need to. It's one of those things where it's like my brain is just like going, and this
firing
happened,
the synapses.
This happened with Tweet and Jest too, where I was just like, it sound is one of those areas that genuinely I don't know much about. And admittedly, like, I feels like with this podcast, I should know more about, but I'm fascinated because sound is one of those things to me that's like it's not tangible, if that makes sense. So it's like,
no, you're absolutely right.
It's a mystery. It's truly a mystery. And really, honestly,
what
like
we
it's
say
so much
is it's nobody notices us unless something goes wrong, unless something feeds back, unless something, you know, is not done the right way. And so in general, I think it's all about us being like flies on the wall and absorbing the information and just like working quickly and in advance so that no one has to wait for us. That's my general experience. Whether it be working on a musical or on a play, we want to be working in advance and just like flying under the radar. Jess Paz actually, when on our day one of tech, she was like, she wasn't there for that day. So it was, she was out of office. She had called me up afterwards and said, "Did anything blow up? Did anyone get hurt?" Then you had a great day of tech. Everybody had what they needed to do in order to work. We're fine. That constitutes a good first day of tech. And it's the lowest bar of standard you could do. But if everyone has all the equipment that they needed to work, if the stage manager's God mic is on, if everyone, if no actors were hurt in terms of like feedback happening into the room, if everyone is able to work, then it was good. In some instances where I found a production to be a little overwhelming and I get scared, I kind of remind myself of that, of like, okay, I did my basic job. Now let's fulfill the other list of my responsibilities.
I'm sure each designer you've worked with has their own style, their own process, and you have your own relationship with each one of how comfortable you are giving input. But I'm just wondering, how much from a creative standpoint, how much creative input do you feel comfortable putting forth, or is maybe expected of you as an associate or an assistant on a production?
Ooh, that's a really good question. How I view it and how Jason Crystal, associate to Nevin Steinberg, would probably answer is an associate really is there to help the needs of the sound designer. Anything that they ask for, under the means, they are there to provide and help towards, because the end goal is to make sure that the team looks good. And so we're under the guise that the sound designer is the one who knows best in terms of what the needs are, what the quote sound is best for the production. And so we're following that. Of course, there's the kind of relationship and where you ask like, what would be best? But I try to keep that, for me as an associate, I relinquish that because that is not my job responsibility. My job responsibility is to help my designer and make sure that the things are being asked of me to accomplish those things and help make that happen. Now, that's not to say that I don't have my opinions of how to do things, but unless it's helpful or for the greater good, I keep those to myself. Yeah.
Given all of the many hats you've already worn, whether it's specifically with sound or any any role within theater. Do you think that that well-rounded experience gives you a different perspective when you approach a job as a sound designer now, and or even as an associate, as an assistant? And then kind of like parallel to that question is it typical for the trajectory of a sound designer to go from like assistant to associate to sound designer, or even like A2, A1, up the ladder, if you will? Is that standard?
That is an excellent question. And I say that because, yes, for me, I find it very important that I have done all these jobs and I've worn all these hats. So I do have a strong understanding of what it is that I'm asking for of my crew when I'm in the position of leadership, asking for oftentimes me asking for 16 to 20 speakers up in the air and people looking at me like, why do you need this many speakers? So I have a little bit more of a holistic understanding of what I'm asking for of my crew. Yeah, it's really normal to be, I mean, I started as an A2. Well, really how I started was I started loading up speakers in whatever space that I could get into. And then I went to board opping. Then I was working as an A2. Then I A1. And then I assisted. Then I associated. So that for me, it doesn't seem unreasonable when I ask such and such of a job responsibility of someone. It's because I too understand what that's like. I've been in situations where I've jumped on and I've made ear rigs as an A2, even though I was the sound designer, even though that wasn't in my job description, I still jumped out and helped out because I didn't want to make my team look bad. I'm there to help the production look good and not make anyone look a mess. And so I will do whatever it is that I have to do in order to help out if we don't have all the skill sets there. It also allows me to like explain to anybody who's a little bit more on the green side what it is that I'm asking for. And I'll explain in a bigger context. Well, this is what the standard is. This is what we do here. I think it would be unreasonable for a sound designer to just come in and ask of things if they kind of never done the job. It just makes it seem like, well, you don't even know what you're asking for. I've been up in the grid, 30 feet up in the air. I've been harnessed so I can make sure that I hang a speaker safely. I have done my time. That doesn't mean I'm not still doing my time. I like backstage with the actors. My full philosophy is one, to spend time with the equipment and like have the hours in.
So this would be a great transition to your sound designing hat. So ooh, since associates and assistants usually are hired by the designer, how do you usually land a design position? Because that's the great mystery. I mean, like, you know, there's places, there's job boards for just about everything, but you never see a designing
absolutely
post, because job posted.
And for a job posting like that for some, I mean, I recall using like Playbill, offstage jobs. I still use those things when I'm starting out. Again, those are more on the sides of anybody who's coming out of college, anybody who is transitioning into this into the biz. Those are good resources for that. TSCCA still has a nice directory for members where the people like share jobs and anybody who could suited for it. But as far as design jobs, I can answer that with this anecdote. So I did a reading during the pandemic with MCC called Gargola. It was a Puerto Rican a play from a Puerto Rican playwright, and it was just on Zoom. And so the relationship I had with the director was very active. The way I show up into the room, I like to ask dramaturgical questions, and I always like to ask what is the end goal of what we're trying to do. Really, it's really important to me on the why. Why are we doing X? For what is the emotional catharsis that we're trying to achieve or end goal of this piece? What are we trying to spark? So I led with that in the process, and it was really beautiful to throw things out there. So Gargola was about some gargoyles. There was a time period in Puerto Rico there were people thought gargoyles were coming alive, and so that was what this 10-minute play was about. People thought that gargoyles were being alive, but it was actually like this cyber hacker doing like their thing. So to make the sound of a gargoyle, like reverbed donkey, I pitch shifted it, I like made it put it backwards, I did a bunch of good stuff to it. But I would throw things out to play on the Zoom room, and the director would say, oh, this is great, this is fantastic, I think this is a little bit too much, can we bump this down a little bit? For me, it's very important to have an ongoing relationship with the director, because they're the ones image who I'm trying to help create. And so my relationship with Christina, shout out to Christina, was so fruitful and so nice that the producers of MCC had always taken stock of that. So Ayanna Parker, who is currently one of the producers at MCC, had reached out to me and said, hey, we're currently working on this production of Soft. What is your availability? It always starts with that. What is your availability and are you interested? And I said yes immediately. Danya is somebody who I've admired from afar for quite some time and somebody who I've been wanting to work with. And that time frame just so happened to be available. So I said, absolutely. So for me, establishing those relationships is very important. You never know who's gonna be going on to direct the next thing. You never know where somebody's gonna be, what institution. So it's important to make sure that you foster those good relationships, because oftentimes people who I've worked with in the past on kind of one-off gigs have recommended me for other gigs, and now I in turn do the same.
So really what you're saying is, like, the relationships can come from the producer or the institutional side, and even the director.
Oh, absolutely. So a director also comes in, like, for a director who's been working for quite some time, they say, like, oh, these are my tribe of people who I work with that I trust, like, hire these people. And it depends all, again, on availability and interest. And then the institution will do their due diligence and hire them. But yes, between the relationships that you are fostering and the direct, the relationships you are fostering, and kind of how you show up into the room, people will acknowledge that, which just, like, circles back to, like, the beginning portion of, like, our thing of, like, how I showed up into the room, what you bring in is what people will acknowledge ultimately.
Yeah. And that's just, like, such a theme. What you just said is recurring for all of our guests that we've had on this podcast over the years, right? So people, obviously, it's people always say, like, they want to work with people who are kind. Like, it's not always about the talent. It's really about, like, the personality, because you're spending a lot of time and a lot of crazy hours, or maybe sometimes only 8 hours with people. You want to make sure it's a good fit, not just absolutely. That, like, obviously everyone has the story's best interest at heart, but it's like, do these styles like mold well, you know? Mold maybe is not the right word there, but, you know, do they blend really nicely?
You are absolutely catching the essence of what it is. Like, it's the same that people will always remember how you make them feel. If you make them feel good about themselves, if you show up with 100%, people will remember that. People will also remember how shitty you made them feel, or the lack of interest you were at the job, or how careless you were doing so and so. Or people will also remember that and not refer you to things, or not actively speak bad, but just pass on and fall to the next. So it's really important to for me to show up and show out in every regard. You know, for me, when I was working at smaller theaters, I said, I'm going to show up the same way that I will at Broadway. Both are just as important to me. Whatever has my attention at that point is the most important to me in that time frame.
Well, that's so interesting, because I was thinking, like, and I was trying to think, I'm still trying to think of how to craft this question. So this might come out jumbled, but I was thinking, because of your current work situation where you're, you know, and also just because there's a shortage right now, you're probably overlapping, right? You're overlapping on gigs. And so sometimes you are the designer. So you are at the top of that team and you're leading that team. And maybe in the same day, you're maybe, you know, talking with the designer as an associate. So it's like I'm sure it's very humbling of, like, that cyclical environment and just kind of in that constant state of, like, learning and kind of, like, pulling off the energy from people. That really wasn't a question. It was more of just, like, an observation at the end of the day, I guess. But
it's a really good observation. I mean, before I, for lack of a better words, was, you know, starting to catch a traction to myself, I would do the same. I would work on my gig that would, you know, pay the bills. I would run a show, and then during the day I would go and design something else, or I would design something and then go off to do another show where I was designing something else. It's the two brain aspect of it really speaks a lot to like the sustainability of our industry. But I've kind of gotten accustomed to working the two jobs, if not planning in advance, because, you know, again, gotta pay the bills, man.
Brian, do you mind if I ask this question since it's tied to the jobs, this one that I have highlighted? Okay, so when I was looking on your website today, I saw you had audio samples, or what you've called, I think, soundscapes.
Maybe yeah, emotional environments and emotional territories.
So I didn't listen to all of them because I was multitasking, but oh my gosh, I was like, wait a minute, this is your portfolio, right? So this is like, and because I was like, this is so unique. And then I was like, no, Mary, this is his portfolio. This is what like scenic designers. I mean, the sounds were amazing. Don't get me wrong, but I don't often see that, and that can come down to just I'm not often looking on sound designers' websites, or maybe they just don't have websites. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's obviously the equivalent of like a scenic designer having pictures of their set, whether it's like from sketches to realization on a stage. And I just what was my question? Okay, so how do you go about choosing the right quote unquote soundscapes to include in their portfolio? Like, where are you finding those clips? Ooh. Or how are you determining what to pull?
That is a good question. I do want to give like a little context behind that. I found when I was an undergrad and I was graduating, I found it so difficult. It was me and Abby Martin, shout out to Abby. We were one of two sound folks. I think it was like 11 in our graduating class. Everybody else was a lighting designer, was a scenic, something visual. And so how do you make sound a visual? How do I showcase that in a website format? How do I give an accessible place to show this is what I can do? And so for me, when I select what I end up wanting to put on my portfolio, it's how does this communicate the things that I'm able to do? How does this showcase to somebody who does not know me and go, oh, this is where his brain goes on X project. This is what he brings to the play. This is what he's capable of doing. And so these are just tools of communication. And so that I always try to lead with that perspective of what more information can I give to someone to say who does not know me and say, this is what I do. For a long time, I would say, I just make sounds. And I still say that actually. It's still my high end description of my job. But to really take myself seriously, this is how I do my job in the same capacity. I'm sure Beyonce doesn't have to do this because she's Beyonce, but Beyonce has her albums. That is her resume of work that she has to do. How do I showcase that? And so I pick, there's one on my website called from a production of Sueño out in Rhode Island. And so I think I made two pieces for that. And so the two samples that I have there are just like the most fun, ridiculous sound cues that I had that I'm like, no one else has something like this. No one else like has anything like this. How do I show that? And that's important. I've often clicked through a lot of Sound Folks' website, and we all have like the same three things, which are like drones and like all the like warbly, like wah, 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 wah. We all love that and like soundscape. So we'll put you in like a nature. We'll put you in like in a babbling, bubbling brook. And so I said, you know what? How do I showcase... You weren't there. You weren't there at the show. How do I give you a little piece of the show?
So at this stage in your career, having the experiences that you've had already, what have you found to be the most challenging aspect of a career in sound? Maybe it's a career in the theater for you, but what's the most challenging part? Maybe it's technically, maybe it's lifestyle.
For me right now, the most difficult aspect of it, of working in theater, is that there is no I made it. There is no this is the one gig and I need to stop here and all the doors open for me. What I think Rob McClure had said this at a talk back one time, but you have to consistently make it. You have to consistently outdo yourself. There is no the one gig and it's going to open all the doors. You have to continue to outdo yourself. You have to continue to learn and find new ways. I'm surprised at myself by how much I've grown since I graduated in 2018. So now for 4 years now, how much insight I've gained into the industry, how much I've learned with the equipment that I now use. And I try to keep that same fire of when I had graduated, of wanting to learn more, pushing myself to try something new, always asking questions, and keeping that today. It's I just finished up a gig, I want to say the other day, where I was talking to a sound designer about mixing, and I was asking what their approach was, because what they had done was stunning. What I had heard in the room was beautiful, and I wanted to know what was their school of thought. And so that kind of self-starter, fire under your ass, cannot go away. And so I've been wrestling with that right now, because it's really easy to stay stagnant, to kind of just be like, oh, whatever, I can do so-and-so and let it be. I have to fight that inner saboteur and always push myself to continue going. So between that and really the lifestyle change, those are my two balancing scales for me right now. And as far as lifestyle goes, it really is of, you know, sometimes I'm just not in my house for months at a time. I spent the better part of the first 6 months traveling on the go. How do I travel better? How do I work in advance? How do I take care of myself, which is really important? How do I foster those relationships while I'm away, not just professionally, but personally? That balance is really difficult when a lot of the work is so time consuming. So between trying to push yourself and trying to stay in shape, for lack of a better word, it's the most difficult thing for me right now, especially because I'm still young. I have a long way to go. I'm still making mistakes. I don't have it perfect. I think the most important thing to me right now is that I'm trying to. And that's the most, for me, the most humbling part of the job.
Mary, what do you say we move into our lightning round?
Ooh. Let's do it.
Kick us off.
Okay, great. I missed this question. what is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
I still don't understand how some folks are still not giving opportunities to other people who want to stay with their same old teams and not give chances for a new way of people. There are people who are hungry, people who can do the job, who are excited to do that. And I don't understand why people don't give people a chance. I recognize people want to do a good job, but like, listen, it's theater. The worst thing that could be is bad. Get over it. There's another show.
And there's a lot of things that are bad.
I was gonna say, yeah. No offense, but you could have the same team and it can still be bad.
Maybe it's
or just not like, you know, bad is subjective, but you know, or it, you know, it's not a favorite.
Exactly. And so I think I credit to my professor about that. Like, the worst thing that it could be is bad. But if you're not trying something new, if you're not giving chances to people, then like, what are you doing? It's then you're gatekeeping and making it like a boys club. It's time for new people, fresh faces. Let's go reinvent the wheel. Let's get with it.
What are three adjectives that describe your ideal working environment?
Ooh, three adjectives. Collaborative, inspiring, and challenging. If it's easy, I don't want to do it. I'm sorry. If it's a walk in the park, then never mind.
I don't think we've gotten challenging before.
I credit it to Jess. Jess says if it's scary, if it moves you in a certain way, like, say yes to that. Follow down that path, because that's what keeps the fire underneath, and that's what's going to make you go. It's going to do one of two things. It's going to make you go. It's going to make you sink or swim, or you're going to rise to the occasion. So challenging, that's important to me. How do I not do the same thing beforehand? If I do the same thing beforehand, then sure, it's another way to pay the bills. But how do we make it challenging? Collaborative is very important to me. Like I said, I'm very in conversation with my director, even with the other departments. I want to feel engaged. I'm very empath in that way of like, let me feed off of what's going around me. And I said inspiring because I want to be proud of the thing that's in front of me. If everyone's working at 100, I will be inspired by that. I will also meet everyone where they are. I like to be around, I want to be in rooms where people are excited about the things that they're doing.
Is there something in your process that you find unique to you?
I have not met any other sound designer that uses just Spanish music for their quiet time. Everybody like Jess has a Cashmere Cat. She has some Prince songs. Tweez music changes up depending on the project. Some people have like their same alt rock. I've not heard any other sound designer who plays like some cumbia or some bachata or like, and that's one I want to get the. One, I want to do my job, yes, and tune the system, but I want to get the crowd going too. So I think that's unique to me.
What is a book or resource that you found helpful for you in your process?
I will say, like, TSGCA is a huge. That's not even just a shameless plug, not just because I'm the Eastern representative, but I wouldn't have done half the things as successfully as I did if it weren't for the resources of reaching out to the other sound designers, reaching out to Jess Paz, calling up Lindsay Jones, having Josh Samuels as an assistant and by my side when I have a difficult question. These other designers are resources. They are people who have done it longer than I have and have know more things than I do. And so I look at them like my encyclopedias, and it changes the perspective of not working against anyone, not working against my peers, or just really working with everyone. So I've like to think of myself as a collection of all the good parts of these folk. So I would say a good resource has been TSDCA because I've met all these folk and been able to use them.
What is one job in the theater industry that you would trade jobs with for 1 week?
Oh, scenic designer. Oh my goodness. They get to clicky clicky on their computer and then show up to tech and be like, oh yeah, it looks good. All right, bye. This is more so a shade to my boyfriend. He's a scenic designer and he does exactly that.
What is one hobby you have outside of the theater?
Oh, I love to go to a good place and like I discover like good foods, especially when I'm on the road. Like I will always ask, what's the most aggressive, like either Texas thing, what's the most aggressive, like Boston food that I, or experience that I could have. Cause I want to have like, I'm not gonna lie. I'm a touristy person when I travel. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna admit to it. And I'm here for the whole experience.
You have to give me your Boston recommendations. I need to know.
It was a clam chowder. It was a clam chowder. The lobster tail of chowder. Of course, it was the lobster tail, of course, and just eating any of the restaurants by the water, by the aquarium. Delicious.
Yeah, the aquarium's really cool in Boston.
So nice.
All right, I'm noting this. I'm going next month.
Hey.
Okay. Last question. What is the last great piece of theater that you saw?
Oh, this is a great question. I saw Fat Ham at the Public.
I was going to ask you about
that.
Oh
my goodness. I thought it was perfect. And I don't say that often.
It won the Pulitzer, right?
I mean, yeah, go for it. It better have, right? I mean, no, it was perfect. I mean, that was a way to engage an audience. The profound sadness that is wrapped up in this comedy. The various tools of storytelling that there was, the unbelievable amount of talent on stage. Oh my goodness, I was blown away. I thought that was a perfect production from beginning to end. That is something that needs to be studied. And if, again, this is for the listeners, if by the time this is out, if you have not already gone to the Public, catch it now while the getting's good.
Yes. Well, tell everybody how they can follow you on social media, your website, all that good stuff. Give all the shameless plugs. And of course, Soft is running at MCC until June 26th.
Yes, it is. I'm also have my first show at Repertorio Español. First time having a show in rep, especially in Spanish. Eva Luna, that'll be running on for years to come, is the hope. Into the Woods will be debuting at the end of the month. And shameless plug. You can catch me on Instagram as Herman, the sound designer. That's G-E-R-M-A-N, the sound designer. And that's it. Oh, and website also.
To listen to those soundscapes.
Listen to those soundscapes. You can catch it at www.germanlikethelanguage.com.
Amazing. Herman, this was amazing. I feel like, okay, so it's always crazy when we talk to somebody from sound, because I live with somebody that does this. So to hear more perspective and just more, it's always so, so enriching and really, really exciting to hear somebody else talk about it other than Stanley.
Much love to Stan. It is my absolute pleasure. And thank you both so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yay.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.